listeners, and welcome to an unusual episode of Tea with Lily. I have the pleasure of being a guest of one of many international women's celebrations over the last month, and this speaker at the PACE working event, Amina Salihu, was by far the most memorable, so with her permission, I thought I'd share an excerpt of her speech with you. But first of all, let's all hear a little bit about this formidable and inspirational woman. Amina Salihu is a political activist, women's rights advocate, and a farmer. She lectured at the Ahmadu Bello University in Nigeria and worked at the Centre for Democracy and Development. As strategy advisor, she designed the Abuja Town Hall meetings and the Federal Capital Territory helpline for government to citizen communication and feedback. The Abuja Town Hall meeting was shortlisted for the German Bertelsmann Prize in 2011. Amina Salihu sits on technical advisory panels and committees for many civil society, private sector and government initiatives in Nigeria. She is co-chair of the board of directors of the Nigerian Women's Trust Fund. It's the first of its kind with a women's political participation grant in Africa. Amina has written widely on women's rights and her latest book, A New Kind of Dance, available on Amazon, documents and shares lessons of working with community women in northern Nigeria during the 2011 elections. Tea with Lily is the social enterprise arm of Lynx Media, a space for informal discussions with a relaxed format where we chat about topical issues over a cup of tea. The aim of it all is to give your brand a voice. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the brand named Amina Salihu.
Education is very important, but we are also beginning to learn lessons through engaging with women, through working with communities, that as important as education is, it is no longer enough. What can and will change the lives of women, and starting from that life circle of girlhood, is access to strategic interventions at the right time. So education is important. Health is also important, and security is no less important. And I'll tell you why as I proceed. Education remains the key nonetheless. Why is this so? If a girl is not allowed to stay in school till, say, she's 16 or 17, she'll be having her first child by that age. And as soon as she does that, that shuts the doors of opportunity, because then she becomes a child nurturing another child. And then all the other circles of, you know, patriarchy then takes over easily. If she stays in school, therefore, fertility is delayed. If fertility is delayed, we have a whole lot less maternal mortality. Because in my country, over 1,500 women die out of every 100,000 during childbirth. I use that figure because that is a figure in northeastern Nigeria. If you looked at the average, it gives you around 500. But then averages have a way of masking reality. And so it's very important that you understand the different dynamics, because we're talking about lives and not statistics. Now, some of the lessons we have learned is that we have to engage. That's absolutely correct, like Leisha said. It's important that we continue to engage with government, because sometimes they just don't know what's to be done. And voice is critical. Listening to my sister Bola, I couldn't agree more that voice is critical. Because in 2005, I was in Abuja, like my sister Sherry said, and the budget was presented. The budget for the education of the entire children of the Federal Capital Territory. And the school for girls had money for home economics laboratory. And the school for boys had money for computer labs. And then he said, why is this the case? And the men said, oh, but it's gender. This is what you want, so we're giving you what you want. And we say, no, brother, you've done very well, but you can do better. Let's have the home economics lab in the girls' school. That's fine. Let's have it in the boys' school as well. And as you have the computer labs in the boys' school, let's have it in the girls' school. They said, oh, is that what you mean by gender? I say, yes, it's something like that. So voice and engagement will remain very important. We would also need to remember that the teachers themselves need to be taught. It's not so much staying in school, which is important, Because only 4% of girls will finish secondary school in northern Nigeria. But it's also the content of what they are learning and the kind of interactions that can happen between girls and boys. Because if we're focused on nurturing a more critical generation of girls, what about the boys that become men tomorrow whom they're going to get shackled up with? It's important, therefore, to look at the equation as two sides, as it were, and to pay attention to what becomes of girls as well as what becomes of boys. We're learning too that faith-based organizations are very important. They are male-centric organizations. They are led by men. The books are interpreted mostly by men. And so where you find men who want to stand and speak with women, they become critical partners in the journey. And that's why I salute the brothers who have found the courage to be here tonight. Sometimes when men speak to the issue, it resonates a lot more because it is not expected that you're going to hear it from a man. And so it's a strategy that we need to explore, to work with the brothers who would like to work with us. Now, I need to say this because I've got powerful sisters in business next to me, and I'm asking myself, Amina, so what is it you're going to take back from this conversation tonight? One is the key lesson that I would like to see a situation whereby the opportunities we're talking about here also begins from, say, Africa. I have got women who do not even know what it means to package their products. Because knowledge is power, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we may take the power, the knowledge for granted, because it is something that we hear every day. It is something that is reproduced around us every day. But people do not even have that basic learning to know that the opportunity exists. So if we're talking about mentoring, which I absolutely agree with, the question is, what kinds of structures are we going to put in place to ensure that mentoring impacts lives? Because that's where the difference happens. We can theorize it, we can talk about it, we can pass the buck, but it's never going to happen unless each one of us here decides that it's an I of responsibility. It's not about a collective, it's not about a government, but each and every single one of us can actually begin to enforce change. So, that's why I had to ask myself that question before I could ask any other person. What is the infrastructure for mentoring? Is it possible to connect some of those smallholder women who have probably never been to any business clinic, who don't know how to write business plans, to the kinds of opportunities that exist? Because that's the way we can actually multiply the voices of women. A second key lesson for me tonight is that we need to change the narrative. And I heard that from the big sisters who spoke before me. So one of the very common narratives is that we can't do it. You know, the whole stereotype thing and the microaggression. Because women are doing it every day. And we need to give more visibility to that by supporting each other, by being there for each other. Because the men are not going to cede power just because we're asking for power. Power is way too sweet to give all my sisters. You know, Goshen. So, we would have to organize, we would have to ask for it, and we would have to be, you know, sustainable in terms of the way we do it. And that brings us to the third lesson that I have learned, is that it's not just about economics. Is also about politics. Economics and politics will go together. They must go together for change to happen. Why is that so? You can't give a woman resources and she's not in control of that resource. And then you expect her to grow. You've got to have control, you've got to be assertive, you've got to be able to manage the resource and say, I am in charge, I take responsibility. And that begins with the way we nurture our girls and our boys and our families. And for me to say that, we also need to change the way we look at winning, because it's a very hard word. And I totally agree we need to be brave, but it's easier to be brave when you're learned, when you do know what the choices are.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know what they say, when it's raining heavy, it's very hard to see ahead. When you are very steeped in trying to survive and trying to just keep alive because the security issues are so daunting, you cannot think ahead. So it's very important for us to encourage women to redefine winning, for those of us who are able to see a little bit clearer ahead. And why am I saying that? The moment a woman, whether it's in politics or in economics, decides she's ready and she steps out and she takes that very first step of courage, she's already won. If she gets there to that boardroom, if she gets there to that political office, that's a second winning. And unless we begin to tell women never to be afraid to take the first step, we're never going to get there. So it's very important that we begin to redefine winning. I know there's been some
There's some presence from
the United Nations here, for example. And I know the Commission on the Status of Women, it's going on right now. And, you know, we're moving from the MDGs to Sustainable Development Goals. And it's quite interesting to see that new thinking is coming on board. And because you're here in the diaspora, I would like to make the appeal, you know, to you in terms of how you pay attention to what is going on in your individual countries. I know you might have adopted the UK or other countries as your country, and that is very legitimate. But you know the thing they say about your roots, they run very deep. And that's the need to pay attention to elections and what they mean. Because especially for women, the right to vote and be voted for is in defense of all other rights. Right now, we are at the verge of elections in Nigeria. I don't know for sisters who have been following the development back home.
Yes.
And here as well, exactly. And there's some people who don't even have their permanent voter's card, which means they're not going to vote. There's some people who have moved their families away somewhere else because they're not sure what tomorrow is going to bring. And I cannot judge them. But my fear is if we turned our backs on a door that is ajar, by the time we turn right back, the door will be firmly shut. And then what happens? Every little space has got to be engaged, has got to be reclaimed, has got to be used to transform lives. Otherwise, we're going to be going around in circles and we'll never break that circle of poverty. So it's important that women are encouraged not just to vote, but also to come out and be voted for. As I conclude, distinguished ladies and gentlemen, I would also like to ask you, because you're here in the diaspora, to support the energy that we're trying to amass against corruption in any form at all. Because corruption is murder by another name. If someone takes away the resource that is meant for people's livelihood and takes it somewhere and keeps it hidden and it's for his or her family alone, that person has inadvertently killed a lot of families, killed a lot of dreams, and stunted a lot of possibilities for people. So it's important that we do not pretend, we do not on the other, but to ask questions. To ask questions as individuals, to ask questions as organizations, because that is the only way we can actually begin to give back, even while we're in the diaspora. So it's not about remitting money, which is very good, but you should also ask the question, the resources that are there, where are they going to? Who is it getting to? Who is not getting it and why? What can we do to support institutions? What can we do to support schools and hospitals, for example? How do we nurture women entrepreneurs? How do we support young girls and boys to have a broader worldview and to connect with others and to see that, look, there are options. There are options. It's 330 days today that over 200 schoolgirls have been abducted. If we didn't have the voices in Nigeria, if we didn't have your voices out here asking the question, people thought it was a joke at the beginning, except, of course, the children's parents who knew what they felt. So the power of the citizen, the moment the citizens fall asleep, democracy is endangered. We do not have the luxury of standing back and saying, it doesn't concern me, it's not in my backyard. Because like my sister said, it's a global world and we're all interconnected. Why? Because our destinies are intertwined. I thank you for listening. Sisters and brothers, in 2011.
I like it.
She's just warming up.
Oh, it's good to see you again, my sister Debbie. In 2011, let me put the house aside up. I was on the field working with women, community women, and that's where I first learned, actually from an old man, about how to redefine winning. And then I came back home and documented the lessons working with these women who everybody thought didn't know anything just because they couldn't tell where A or C faced. And it's titled A New Kind of Dance. And in Hausa, that's translated into Sabor Gada. Because I wanted to give back to the community where we had taken the stories from. As a feminist, you do not objectify your subject, so to say. You've got to give them back that respect and that life. And so it's important that the message is taken back to them. And there's a slimmer version of it in Hausa. Now, why am I formally presenting this to you? I'm doing this because I want to ask you to please share the information, pick up a copy. It's on Amazon. It's easier. No, I didn't come with loads because I wasn't going to do excess luggage. But I know the sisters here know what to do. It's on Amazon. It's in Kindle form. It's also in hard copy form. And what I have done with the proceeds is to donate it to the foundation named after my mother, which actually gives a hectare of land to young girls and boys out of my business to grow food and to earn income. For 5 years, they'll be given a plot of land for free, after which they're supported to establish their own farms. And I sit on the board of Engine. Engine is called Educating Nigerian Girls, a New Enterprise. And there's some Engine parents amongst us who have actually been given the space to grow the food because their daughters have to go to school. So the deal is, you have the farmland, but your children must go to school. Mm. So connecting yet again the politics and the economy. And I thought I'll share this with you. I thank you for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in and listening to Amina Salihu's message of inclusion and hope for all. If you have any questions, email me at lilyyeboah@gmail.com and I'd be happy to pass on any messages. Amina Salihu is also on Facebook and all other social media, so do follow and support her. Her book, A New Kind of Dance, is also available on Amazon. You can get a paper copy or an ebook. All proceeds go toward the work that she does with the community of women. I'm your host, Lily Mensah-Yeboah, and until next time, keep smiling, always, always hopeful, and here is to you abundant success for everything that you do.